Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here, and joining me in the studio, Dr. Henry Cloud and Mylon Yurkovich, and your phone calls here at newlife.com and New Life Live.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You are welcome. What's going on?
My question is in regards to my son, who's 13 years old. He has gotten involved in some pornography.
We basically had a relationship of fighting over everything.
There's no doubt in my mind that God used that time.
There's a red flag when somebody's only got two friends. Okay, so number one, that would cause a question.
Why did you set yourself up for that so early? The baby's not even out of the womb yet.
You know, you take kids 14, and they are just right in the midst of when they need a dad the most.
I started out there, and I've recovered very strongly from that position.
But there was an AA, Anxious Anonymous.
I would have been the star poster child for it.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here with two colleagues and wonderful friends and just great clinicians, Mylon Yurkovich and Dr. Henry Cloud. Hi, guys.
Hey, Stevie.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm really good today. And, you know, I was thinking before we went on the air, we have talked so much about books that I've written and books that you've written, Mylon. But, Henry, I want you to talk a minute about this great book. I think it's going to be one of the most successful books you've ever done, Necessary Endings. Tell us a little bit about that from a perspective of, you know, how could it help us?
You know, it's interesting, Steve. I just found myself working with this concept in people's lives for just more and more. And the concept is this. If you go to Ecclesiastes 3, you know, that great chapter about there's a time and a season for everything, a time to plant, a time to uproot what's been planted, a time to embrace, a time to shun from embracing, a time to this and a time to that. Half of that chapter is about endings.
Mm-hmm.
And God takes us through seasons of life, and we're supposed to be involved and engaged in those seasons. And then those seasons end, and we have to have the courage and the faith to shun from embracing those anymore and to uproot what's been planted and to move on. You know, God called Abraham to go out and he's leading the whole, he's going to establish a nation and end up in a promised land, but he had to leave Ur. He called Lot and his family out of Sodom. And Jesus called the disciples. And people have trouble stepping up and ending things. It may be that it's time for you to leave a church that's no longer the right season for you and your family. It may be time to take a necessary ending to an extended family that's refusing to come out of denial and is toxic. It may be time to leave something good to go to the next phase of whatever God has for you. But the problem is, we are not very well equipped to do these endings because we're afraid we're going to hurt people's feelings, or we're afraid of the unknown, or we're afraid of whatever it is. And that's what the book is about stepping up and doing the necessary endings that have to happen before the next thing that God has for you in your life.
Don't you think one of the toughest ones is when a single has invested 3 years in the life of somebody and you just know it's going nowhere, but you just keep wishing and hoping?
Yeah, it's one of the most important necessary endings that somebody can do. You know, if you're single and you're in a pattern of on again, off again, on again, off again, and that relationship is not working, and you have done everything on your side of it to grow and to work out what you're contributing, and the other person, for whatever reason, is not stepping up to the plate of what would have to be resolved in order to have a good relationship, then it's time for a necessary ending. If you've done everything you can do and the other person's not, you are spending time with false hope. And the thing about hope is hope spends time. And if you have hope, you better have hope in some good objective reason instead of just a wish.
Well, great, great word there. And, you know, I hope and pray that if you're sensing, okay, maybe there is an end to something that I'm doing that needs to occur. After 7 years of engagement, this thing may not go anywhere. Things like that, that you'd consider this wonderful book, Necessary Endings. You know, we've got a great, great bookstore there at newlife.com. Come and check out our resources, newlife.com.
Hi, everybody. Max Locato here. You know, I've been a pastor for over 25 years, and in the process, I've been fortunate to cross paths a few times with Steve Arterburn and his team at New Life. And I can tell you for a fact that these are good people doing real ministry work where the rubber meets the road. One of the ways they help people is through their New Life Weekend. The Apostle Paul writes about finding the transformation that comes from the renewing of your mind. That's what these folks at New Life specialize in. Whether you struggle with anger, unforgiveness, depression, grief, boundaries issues, maybe you've never worked through the pain of a past abortion, maybe you need a marriage tune-up, maybe your marriage is in crisis. Listen, these good people can help you. Call them today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 and ask about the New Life Weekend.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
Hey, we're back. Steve Arterburn here with Milan Jurgovich and Dr. Henry Cloud. We're going to go right to the phones, and let's go over here and talk with Kenna from Irving, Texas. KWRD is the station. Hi there.
Hello.
Kenna. Hi. Hello, Kenna. All right, we're going to have to get back to you there. Let's see. Who would be great? How about... Let's talk with Donna from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, WFIL. We're going to be there next month with our New Life Weekend, Healing is a Choice. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're doing okay today. How could we help
you? I love you guys. I love your ministry. I just wanted to say thanks for everything that you guys do.
I actually saw you guys,
I don't know if you remember, you were in Souderton, Pennsylvania a few years ago, and Henry, it's actually when you learned what a Wawa is. I don't know if you remember that seminar.
A Wawa?
Yeah, it's like our convenience stores up here. You guys didn't know what a Wawa was, so we all thought that was pretty funny.
Now
I think
are those the stores?
I think Henry's forgotten what a Wawa is at this point.
Are those the stores that say, is it Tasty Cakes? Are those the little... The little Twinkies.
Yeah, we have
thing?
The Tasty Cakes up here. Yep, okay. In the Wawas.
There you go. Now I remember.
Yes.
Okay. Well, from Wawas to us, how could we help you today?
And hopefully no oh knows that
or
you're going to talk about.
Uh-oh.
Right. Right.
Only up north.
Exactly.
My question is about codependency. I'm in my early 40s and just had my heart ripped out again. I'm at the end of a relationship, just brokenhearted and empty. And a friend of mine has, thank God, pointed me in the direction of codependency, and I'm just reading a lot about it and realize that it's me to a T. And my dad was an alcoholic. He died about 13 years ago, and I'm just wondering, I'm learning about this stuff. How do I live it? How do I apply it so I don't keep ending up in these brokenhearted relationships?
And when you say it, what do you mean?
Just everything about codependency, how I kind of attach my life to theirs, and I...
Can you get out of the theoretical for a moment and give us, like, one issue that you do? One behavior?
I totally let go of myself, and my life becomes about the relationship, it becomes about the guy, and I just...
Okay, give me a behavior. What does that behavior look like? You can't change a concept. You can change behavior. Give me a behavior.
I really don't even know if I know what you mean. It's just the way that I live it.
Well, let me give you some examples, okay? Here would be a behavior. A guy promises, you're dating a guy, he promises to show up and he's going to do something and this, that, and the other, and he doesn't do it and he doesn't call and you're stuck there and you haven't heard from him and he, you know, 2 hours later you get a text and you're supposed to go to dinner or whatever it is and he wants to come by and just kind of hang out. And that's a pattern.
Yeah, basically I just always try to understand where they're coming from, and I would just say, oh, that's okay.
Okay, that's a behavior.
I understand why you were late, and I just let them walk all over me. And
That's a behavior. So if you want to change codependency, what would a different behavior be?
I guess let them know that that's not okay.
And how would you let them? How would you let him know that that's not okay?
See, this is where I get stuck. I'm always afraid to tell them.
Okay, stop. Stop explaining. How would you let him know that that's okay?
Or
that it's not okay?
I'm not. Yeah, just tell him. You know, look, you're late. You didn't do what you said you were going to do, and that's not okay with me.
Yeah, that usually doesn't help. How would you show him that it's not okay? I mean, I'm fine with telling him, but how are you going to show him it's not okay?
I guess not accept that behavior anymore?
Yeah, you would say, gosh, I am really bummed about this. We had a date, you were going to come, and now he didn't, so, you know, I'm going to go do something else.
See,
and I'm not going to be available the next time he wants you.
See, there's two things, Donna, that will plague you. One is idealism. Since you had an alcoholic parent, the idealism, I'm going to find this person that's going to be perhaps wonderful, perfect. You can throw and give them too much credibility before they've earned it. And you can give them way too much of yourself before they've ever proven that they're worthy of that. And then the second thing that really is something I personally had to work on, including that, was the concept of fear. I was so afraid, and I never wanted to get angry at anybody. See, Henry is saying it's okay to get angry at somebody and say, you know, you can't treat me like that. And so we're not going on a date tonight. Call me tomorrow. Perhaps I'll go out tomorrow. But if I get angry with somebody, that's a separating emotion. And the last thing codependent people want to do is create separation because they're afraid to be alone.
Exactly, and that's exactly what I do.
Right. And so it's important to really deal with the history and to simultaneously work on the present but to also grieve the past and to really understand why am I this way and understand my family system created me. A person that idealizes others and is also afraid to be me, lest I lose them. It's a fear of separation. And in the book Changes That Heal, there's a section that Henry wrote. It's entitled Learning to Separate from Others. And then that concept became a lot of their boundary work. But learning to separate is really a journey of what happens if I say no to this guy. And I'm standing on the other side of the fence by myself, and I'm alone in my apartment, and I take a shower and go to bed. How do I feel having said no or making this person angry? And it's scary, but I'm not an adult until I can make people upset. I'm not an adult until I can be angry and voice myself. Because you said, I lost myself in the relationship,
right.
Which is to give people right. too much.
Yeah, and when I grew up, I mean, basically when we expressed our opinions, my dad would either slap us across the face or we'd get yelled at, so I learned to keep my mouth shut.
Absolutely.
And right, and the pain of my dad leaving is like the pain of this guy walking away.
Right.
So I do everything I can to prevent that.
Right, and that's not an adult yet. So you're still a little girl at 40 inside, just parts of you, not everything about you, but there's parts of you that are still little. And so what we have to do, you know, the Apostle Paul said in Ephesians 4, we're to grow up in all aspects unto him who is the head, even Christ, until we all attain to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. That is, we begin to look like Jesus. And Jesus wasn't afraid to speak his mind. Jesus wasn't afraid to say what he felt. He wasn't afraid to be alone. Henry, you have an idea.
Yeah, Donna, I was going to go back to that moment that Milo's describing. You know, when you say to him, gosh, you know, I was planning on your being here. I got to go. I'm going to go do something with the rest of my evening. Okay? And then you say, you know, I'll talk to you sometime or whatever, and you hang up. Okay? What happens at that moment to you?
Mm-hmm.
It's very painful for me.
Okay.
I'd always rather accept their behavior.
Well, that's the old way. When you call and said, how am I going to change this? We're going to talk about new behaviors, okay?
Okay.
I know you'd rather do that because that's how this happens. So now you're sitting in your apartment. You've said goodbye to him. And what do you do then?
Usually I'm upset and calling my girlfriend for advice.
Okay, and what do you...
I need to get past that.
What are your girlfriends saying at that point, the girlfriends you're calling?
He's a jerk, let him go.
Okay, and then you do what? Do you say, oh, you're right, I feel better now?
I tend to hold on.
All right, so what do you do with that?
I need to move past that.
No, that's what you need to do, but what do you do with it currently?
Usually I just sit around and mope and feel depressed.
All right. Now, here's the deal. When your alcoholic father would disappoint you, okay, and you had that, you know, the depressed and all the stuff you described, you didn't have anywhere to go to it, to go with it. And that's what's happening at that moment. You have nowhere to go with it. So you repeat the pattern of kind of going back to dad and pleasing him again. What I want you to do is have in place in your life, and this is where a good boundaries group, a good codependency group, a good group of other women that's working on the same issue, you guys covenant together, you meet, you know, once a week, you go through the book or the workbook, or you're talking about this, and then you promise each other that when you get in those moments, those are the women you're going to call, not the girlfriends that just focus on what a jerk this guy is, but the ones that help you sit there and work through that pain of feeling like, I can't live if this guy doesn't call me back. I can't make it through this. And then you find somebody to connect with, which is the family of God that is current and present and available for you now that wasn't available for you when you were a child. And that's how God transforms us with the healing work of his body. But to just try to do it through willpower and learn to say no without anything changing on the inside through insight, it's not going to do it. You've got to be provided for through the body of Christ and through his spirit and through his word and through your relationship with him to change these patterns. And you can change them, but it's going to take some changes in behavior.
And then the feelings will change as that behavior begins to change over time.
Yeah, because you're not, you know, if I'm hungry, okay, and I'm starving, and somebody offers me some poison food, and I say, gosh, I'm not going to eat that, and I say no to the food, I'm sitting there in my house hungry, right? So what behavior do I need to change to make the hunger go away? Think differently? That's not going to do it. I got to go find some food. So that's the behavior that's got to be changed, is to get in a process that's going to fill your tummy with love through the relationships and community that God gives you. And then you're going to be a strong person who's not drawn to the guys that are going to replay that pattern, because you're going to, you know, get rid of them so much earlier.
That makes so much sense. I just got done reading Healing is a Choice, and I just started attending Al-Anon meetings.
Go, girl.
All right.
There you go.
There you go.
So
yeah,
you are
so
on your
guys
way.
Books, I need to live it.
But you know what? In Al-Anon, you got a sponsor. So when you hang up with that guy, you call your sponsor. When he calls you back, that's what caller ID's for.
Great. Yeah, I'm learning I need to change myself and not change the guy, and I'm just...
See, Donna,
when I get around guys, I tend to just go right back to that fear place, but I want to move forward.
Donna, you know? the feeling you have when you feel alone in your apartment that Henry was talking to you about, that feeling, alone, scared, and isolated, and fearful, that's the same feeling you felt when you were probably a little girl. It's an old, familiar feeling.
Right.
And so that means that part of you hasn't grown up inside. I've been there. And I needed to do the new and different behaviors, as Henry and Steve are talking about in the book, Healing is a Choice, and as Henry just outlined, so that I begin to change my internal reactions to these adult interactions. My internal reactions will change over time.
That's exactly where I want to get, absolutely.
Good.
Well, I hope to see you guys in Philly. I'm trying to get the money together to go to your weekend.
I hope you can.
You guys and your ministry and what you do. You're so helpful, and I really appreciate your taking my call today.
You got it.
All right.
Hey,
Don,
I'm going to leave you one thought about codependency.
Okay.
A codependent, where the term comes from, is that they are dependent on a dependent person. Okay, it starts with, you know, chemically dependent people had a codependent who depended on them, and they dance this dance. This is how dangerous codependency is. When you are dependent on people with problems, you will have a lifetime of disappointment. That's the pattern it sets you up for, because think of what, to make you feel okay, you need a problem in your life. That's what codependency is at its essence. So that's why it's so important to get over this, because you want to be in a place where you need, you hunger and thirst, as the Bible says, for goodness and righteousness and all the light and truth and love and all of that. You don't need dysfunction. You need good food. And that's what the life of redemption and the life of healing and wholeness is about. But codependency gets in the way of that. That's why this is a deep, deep spiritual sickness that God wants to heal in your life.
Well, I want to send you How We Love, and it certainly covers the type of attachment that's occurred there in your life. I think it'll be a blessing to you and anybody else. All right, we'll take a break and come back with more of New Life Live. Glad you're with us today on New Life.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
My relationships with my husband, with my friends, with my family are much richer and deeper and honest. Particularly my relationship with God, I see Him in a more accurate form and begin to trust Him more. There's joy and there's peace because I have the internal tools that I can trust. So it's radically changed my life. I'm just not even the same person.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
Take the leap, jump in, and go for it. It's changed my life completely.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment. Call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to New Life Live.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here, and hoping that you'll join us in the next month, July 22nd weekend, for the Healing is a Choice New Life weekend. Every month we have Every Man's Battle. We've got a Wives in the Battle coming up, or Women in the Battle coming up. So many things that we do because we love to see people transform their lives through using truth and connection and really changing the way that they think. So call us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. All right, let's over here, let's go to Lainey from Nashville, Tennessee, and, well, listens online. Hi, Lainey.
Hello there, guys. I'm so glad to talk to you. In the last 5 years, I've been really intentional about growing and learning, and I've made some major changes in my life. It took 20 years of listening to your program and reading every book I think any of you've written, and 2 years in a boundaries class that met weekly, and plugging into some really good counseling, and unfortunately ended in a divorce after 31-year marriage. But what I'm calling about today, after thanking you for all you've done for me over the years, is that what I'm seeing now is something I want to know what to do to be the most help I can to my daughters. Both my daughters are married. I taught them, by example, to accommodate unreasonable expectations and demands.
Wow.
And I know that. I know I did. We have a very close relationship, the girls and I, and so I've been very open and honest with them about my growth process, and they've watched that unfold also.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm seeing a clear pattern in one of my daughter's marriage. And it's the same dynamic. It's testings and punishments. And I'm just wondering how...
What does that mean, testings and punishments? Explain that a little bit to us, what's going on.
Okay, I'll give you one example, and it'll be the just the tip of the iceberg, okay?
Okay.
Just recently, I was visiting with them, and with the married couple, and I could tell that he was silently berating her about something, and what it turned out to be was that he had hiccuped. And she said, God bless you. But he hiccuped a couple more times, and she didn't say, God bless you, then. And it troubled him that she didn't offer him the God bless you more times since he hiccuped more times.
Mm-hmm.
A recent Sunday in church, she didn't hold his hand during the service because she was taking notes. And after the service, they spent the rest of the day talking through that because he would not accept her explanation that she didn't hold his hand because she was taking notes.
Okay. So what's the question for us then?
Okay. The question for you is how can I best advise her when she asks me?
Does she ask you?
She does.
What does she ask?
Well, mostly, I guess, she'll tell me what has happened and that it drives her crazy and that it makes her angry.
And what do you say?
What I say to her is that I know that they would benefit from some really good Christian counseling.
Hmm.
And I've even gone to the point of calling New Life, and I've paid for their first session with one of your counselors. And they haven't gone because there's a strong aversion in the church there and within his family to seek Christian counseling.
Sure. Well, you know, just the mentality of lecturing over not holding your hand, that's going to indicate a tough time with counseling.
Let me just toss in a quick idea here.
Okay.
Just that what I see in this, in your daughter's husband, is he responds to the pattern of a person who's ambivalently attached. In our book, they ask us for a different name, so we pick the word vacillator. But
yes.
Ambivalently attached people are very sensitive about any kind of rejection, and they're sensitive about separation, of any type of separation. It could be the exclusion, the failure to acknowledge, the failure to acknowledge their presence, and they don't tolerate separation very well. It always helps to know what you're up against. And if your daughter were to read our book, How We Love, and read the vacillator chapter, which describes the ambivalent person, she'd begin to see what she's up against. She'd also be able to, in the workbook there, if you're living with a vacillator, ambivalent, how do you help them? How do you respond? How do you behave as a spouse to draw them into a growth as opposed to being pulled back into their trap of having to sit there and be grilled for 3 hours or 4 hours in the afternoon?
Right.
And this ties into a caller we had a little while ago of how do I have an adult voice and say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to allow myself to be grilled for 4 hours in the afternoon. How do I have boundaries that allow myself to say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. But the anger of the ambivalent is so strong many times, people are intimidated and they acquiesce because of fear. And so it would help if your daughter knew what she was up against. And that may be a start, as well as her weakness of not being able to voice her adult self and to say this is objectionable. So instead of calling mom, she's able to say to him, this is unacceptable. I will not, like my mom, tolerate the intolerable. I will choose to have an adult life that's different.
All right. I hope that's helpful. We'll be back.
You think I'm a great person, full of life and fun to be around. You say you love me, but if you knew what was going on in my head, I don't think you'd love me anymore. I saw my first girly magazine when I was 7, and I was hooked. I look at porn every chance I get. I've tried to stop over and over again. Sometimes it works for a couple days, but then I fall right back into my old ways.
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I want to stop. I need help. I can't do this on my own.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
I just absolutely believe in the mission of New Life, and I feel that the materials provided and the biblical counseling perspective is so valuable and not available in so many places. And New Life and membership in Club New Life provides access to the live program and also CDs available to listen to. So I know it's easy to turn on the radio and receive the benefit, but those services don't come without expense, and I would sure like to see the program remain on. So I would like to challenge listeners who listen and receive benefit but haven't yet given to actually give this year and continue the giving, of course, because more people need to hear.
Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE and ask how you can start your Club New Life membership today. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to the program.
We are back. July 22nd. Right there in Philadelphia, we're going to talk about healing is a choice. And we're going to talk about one of the choices, the choice to feel your life rather than just talk about it, to feel it. And to be able to embrace some of the struggles and suffering rather than deaden them or deny them. It's going to be a great time. And if you want information, you call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE or you go to newlife.com. All right.
Hey,
let's
Steve?
Go. Yes, sir.
Can I just say one thing real quickly about our last call? Because I think a lot of people are find themselves in that kind of situation.
Okay.
Where what happens is somebody that they love, might be a, you know, one of their adult children, it may be a friend or whatever, is stuck, right? And so what they do is they come to the friend and they kind of, you know, process it all. And what they're doing really is kind of like, you know, sort of bleeding off pain in a way. And so you sit there and you talk and you listen and this, that, and the other. But after a while, if you're not seeing any change, what really becomes important, I think, is for the listener to move to questions instead of giving advice.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're giving advice to somebody, I mean, we know this through brain scans, you know, when you're giving advice to a person, their brain is basically asleep. It's not doing anything. And that doesn't turn into new behaviors. But when you're having them do something, you know, and think and process, then that does actually grow new neurons. And so if she would just say something like, gosh, I hear how painful this has been. What are you going to do about it? What do you think your next step is? What have you thought about? And not give her any answers, not give her any advice, but just ask questions that leave her sitting with some sorts of choices, then oftentimes, after you listen to it long enough, that may help.
Also, don't you think if she just sometimes talks about the way she felt, her personal feelings when she was up against this with her daughter's father, the alcoholic? I mean, it just seems like there might build the connection a little bit if she can share her own story more.
Share it and how long it took her. You know, I did it for 20 years, and I was stuck before I took a step. hope you don't wait 20 years, you know, recommend a book like Mylon said. But the point is, if you stay in too much of a role of rescuing them from the distress, it's the distress and being stuck with it that's going to cause somebody to act.
Yeah.
And so you just have to call them to action at some point.
All right. Very good. Well, we went to Kena earlier from Irving, Texas, KWRD. Let's go back to Kena. Hi, Kena.
Hi.
Hi there. How are you and how can we help you?
I'm doing well today, and thanks for taking my call. I am very nervous, but for starters, I ordered the How Do We Love Our Kids book, and I have the CD, and I read the Please Your Parent chapter, and in reading that, I kind of cried the whole day when I read it because it really resonated with me so much, and I just want to start the road of recovery for myself and for my kids, and I just want to know what will you have me do to start that. I mean, I work full-time. I don't have a lot of time to focus or work on myself, but I do want to start the road to recovery soon.
Well, first of all, congratulations on reading something and seeing yourself in it and saying, I need to do something about this.
I do.
When I read stuff, I just think of all the other people that need to read it. You know, it's just kind of a bad habit I have.
Right. And you know, so I have a 3- and a 4-year-old, 2 girls. And my 3-year-old, sometimes she'll ask me, Mommy, are you okay? Or Mommy, are you happy? And my 4-year-old, she's always, like, nervous, or she wants to fix things, or she's just so jittery sometimes. And I don't know if it's me or if it's her, but I can't help but think I had something to do with it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I've never really dealt with the issues of my past before, and I just realized, you know, maybe I need to deal with it more. I don't know.
Okay. So Mylon, you have thought there? Oh, okay, ask a specific question then.
Okay. Well, in my past, I was molested by an older brother from 6 to 12. And I kind of think that's just where it started. You know, I never dealt with it. We never talked about it as a family or anything. And I just can't help but think that's why I am the way I am today. So maybe I need counseling. Maybe I need help. I don't know. I just need some guidance.
You know, in the last call, Henry was talking about laying down new neural pathways. And it's possible because our brains have the capacity over a lifetime to have the ability to transform. And what's important here is to understand that as a parent, if you are not regulated yourself, it's hard for you to regulate your kids. So if you see them as they're struggling with their own internal regulation and they're jittery and nervous, etc., you're right. It may be a reflection of you because one of the first roles of the parent is to be the regulator of their child's emotions. And if we do a good job of that, by the time they're, you know, 6 years old, they can go off to kindergarten and they can have the capacity to self-regulate because somebody has helped them regulate. Now, you spoke of a very powerful trauma in your life, and it is important that you do talk about it because otherwise the fear, the apprehension, the constriction, the holding yourself in, and then internalizing all that pain is going to leak out sideways onto everybody around you, into your marriage, your kids, your friendships.
Right.
And so I love the track you're on. And essentially, fear is probably one of the most important things for the pleaser parent to address because they're afraid to have boundaries with their kids. They're afraid to say no. They're afraid of separation. And pleasers want to be close more than anything, and so they don't do anything to risk pushing people away from themselves. But I don't want to monopolize the call. I'd like what Henry's thoughts are on how do we heal from a horrible childhood that she had of being molested by a brother and how she can heal and be a better mom.
Well, I'd kind of say the same thing in that children learn their patterning from us as parents, right? Mm-hmm. And so as you are working out, you know, all the effects of your formative years, what that's going to do is it's going to change your behavior vis-a-vis your kids. So you're going to be more present with them. You're going to be more direct. You're going to require better behavior from them. You're not going to take as much lip from them. You're going to be more patient when they fail. You're going to push them out, you know, to try new challenges and this, that, and the other. And that's God's way. You know, he meant for behavior to be learned through generational patterning of us walking in his ways, and then our kids, we teach it and they catch it. And so I agree. You heal, but you use what you're getting in your healing to interact differently with your kids. I drive my kids crazy, you know, hopefully in a good way, by making them work out conflicts, for example. You know, when I grew up, the last thing anybody did was sit down and work out a conflict, you know, with a family member. You just sort of, you know, left the house or something. And yet yesterday, or I guess it's been a while now, a week or so ago, one of my daughters was saying, okay, you know, here we go again. Dad's going to make us sit down and work it out. And it was kind of that love-hate thing, but I looked at her and said, you're exactly right. We're going to sit here until you guys work this out. And that's a new pattern I had to learn in adulthood. But they're learning it because I won't let them get away with it, because I don't want a family that doesn't work things out. And that's what you're going to do. As you get healthy, you're going to pass that on.
Okay. I can do that. I mean, and I just feel so broken all the time. And I just feel like I'm no good to God, broken, because I do want to grow spiritually. I read my word and stuff. And then sometimes when I get in church, I kind of lock up some. And I kind of feel like that, you know, this is where it started for me. And I just feel so broken. And so I just really want
to. But see, Keena, you just said, I'm no good. Now, you said no good. And I'm not going to let you do that, because that's too severe. You have more good in you than what you just described. You are broken. I'm broken. Henry and Steve are broken. We're all recovering from brokenness our entire lives. So if you say, I'm broken, I'm of no good, you're automatically disqualifying yourself from being a parent at that moment. Then all of a sudden, your kids have no mom. It's too extreme. I'm trying to make one point. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Good point.
Henry, I interrupted you. Was there something else you were going to say there?
Well, I was just going to say it's kind of the opposite. What you're describing is the opposite of the Bible. You know, when you say any of us says we're too broken, you know, for God, the Bible says that Jesus came to seek and to save that which was lost. The Greek word, if you look in the New Testament, the word for lost means broken beyond repair. So Jesus' entire mission or message is that he's looking for that which is so broken that we can't repair it, and that's exactly why he came. So you take your brokenness, you take your inability, you take your need, and you go to God, and that's when the angels begin to dance in heaven, because that's what the whole gospel is. God doesn't want people coming to him that think they've got something to offer. We don't have anything to offer God except ourselves. So you take that broken self to him, and he'll make you into something that you never thought could happen.
All right. We'll be back right after.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
I feel like I'm a person for the first time in my life. I feel like I wasn't whole before, or that I couldn't enjoy life. I had such a big weight on my shoulders that I had nothing to look forward to. I'm such a better wife, and I'm a better daughter, friend, a better worker. I feel absolutely free.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
If anybody is considering Christian counseling, then they need to do it. They need to take that step.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Max Licato here. As a pastor, I've seen how important it is for people to come and get good Christian counsel. People make decisions that turn out to be the wrong decision. I heard Steve Arterburn say on New Life not too long ago that the same thinking that got you into your mess isn't going to get you out of it. If you find yourself in a spot and you don't know what the next right thing to do is, then won't you call the good people at New Life? They have a network of Christian counselors around the country that's more than 850 strong. Call today 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. and tell them you need to find someone to help you. They're likely to have a counselor in your area to help you with whatever you're struggling with. It will be good, godly counsel. Call today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here. Let's have our final caller will be Derek from Atlanta, Georgia. WNIV is the station. Hello, Derek. Welcome.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. How could we help?
I had a couple questions. In the capacity of relationships, it seems like whenever I meet somebody and, you know, so it seems like things are going okay and seems like, you know, you're getting along and things seem to be going, you know, okay. Seems like the person just suddenly, just abruptly, just doesn't want to basically continue on with the friendship or relationship, usually relationship. And it just seems to be happening over and over and over and over and over again. I can almost time it on my watch when it happens. You know, and it's just been kind of a source of great frustration for me.
Sure.
Because I just don't know why this is happening. And, I mean, I guess I'm really asking is why that happens. And if this is some, maybe God is just telling me, maybe that's not his will for me in my life to have somebody, you know, in a relationship-wise. Maybe I'm not meant to. I don't know.
Derek, if I'm understanding this right, you start dating someone and then it's going fine and then they just unplug?
Yeah. Yeah, they just, I don't know where.
Have you ever done
it? And it happens at varying stages. Like,
have you ever done an exit interview?
I'm sorry?
Have you ever done an exit interview and asked them, you know, when they're doing the breaking up, say, you know, it's fine, I accept that, but I'm trying to sort of grow and figure myself out here. What is it that you kind of, you know, don't find appealing, or what is it you're moving away from, or why do you want out?
Yeah, I've never really asked that.
I would do that.
Call somebody.
It never occurred to me. Yeah.
Well, you could call somebody, that just one person, and say, "Oh, you know what? It happened again. What happened with you? Help me understand." Yeah. But here's a question I have for you: is there something about your life that, when people find out about it, you think, "Well, that might be the reason they reject me"? Just something that's kind of common sense. Is there anything like that?
I've kind of went over that, and I can't really think of anything.
Okay.
Nothing really comes to mind that would make them say, I don't think so. Or I don't
okay, Derek. Derek, I'm going to just take a statistical guess for you. Okay.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I would say that the largest percentage of guys that find themselves with this issue that you're talking about now are they? Uh-huh. These are women that you really like.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
The women that I, you know, really like or attracted to, it just seems like we get along, and it just seems like, you know, it's almost like I'm even afraid to get even closer because I'm afraid, okay, this is when.
Yeah. Okay, well, let me give you a statistical guess. It would be that because you like her, you get too passive, and you're not active and assertive and aggressive and demanding enough in a good way where she has somebody to adapt to. And that is a big, big, big passion killer for a woman. If she feels like that nobody is showing up to kind of keep her off balance a little bit, and she has to adapt to and do some you know, like equality stuff. And if you're in the fear mode where you're wondering what should I do to make her like me and all this sort of stuff, and you're not showing up where she has to dance, then she's going to unplug.
Okay. So to understand, is it I'm just being too basically too accommodating?
Probably too. That statistically, I would say if you go solve that one, if that doesn't do it, call us back.
Call us next month.
Yeah.
Because men that get left by women, when nothing is wrong, it's because generally they're not giving them enough to have to adapt to. Men that get left by women because things are wrong. It's usually because they're not hearing the woman's complaints. But see, those women are not leaving. Those women are complaining over and over and over. You know, I feel alone, or you're mean, or you don't listen, or this, that, and the other. They're so plugged in, they're not going anywhere. You know, they got the fix-it disease. They ought to read boundaries and move on. But that's not the kind of man that it sounds like you are. They're not staying plugged into you too long and trying to fix you. They're moving on, it may be, because they're waiting for somebody to show up.
And you just gave us that idea. You put that idea in our head because you said, at a certain point, I start to become fearful that this is going to happen again. And we can set up a self-fulfilling prophecy here. We can actually create and sabotage the connection by doing what Henry says, because if you become fearful, you're going to shut down and back up.
Okay, yeah.
Do you think you do that?
Yeah. Okay. I think I do that to a degree. And I'm just trying to understand, like, waiting for the person to show up, meaning...
That's a great phrase, and we're almost out of time, but it's a great phrase.
I mean, it's very little things, Derek, like where are we going to go for dinner? What movie are we going to see? What are we doing tomorrow? What do you think about this? You know, do you like this or do you like that? And instead of adapting to all of her desires and opinions and this, that, and the other, that you're strong and assertive and you're planning and you're taking charge, and it doesn't mean you're dominating, but it means that there's... There's some sort of good, healthy friction. That's what a relationship is.
A person shows up.
Okay.
Yeah, you're there.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to send you a copy of How We Love. I think there's some really good stuff about attachment styles that might show you why it's hard for you to stay attached. I think it'll really help you there. And I'm so glad that you called. Well, I do think it's important for people to hear that sometimes when you're so compromising and pleasing, people start to think there's no one there, and they move on.
Well, Steve, respect is earned. You know, people don't hand out respect just right and left. We have to earn respect.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Well, we're glad that you've been listening with us. We sure do need your support. We've got some supporters right there in Laguna Beach in the studio, and we're so grateful that they stopped by. We love it when people on vacation come by and say hello. And, you know, when you do, you don't see a bunch of people sitting around drinking beer, smoking cigars. I'll guarantee you that you see hardworking folks who love serving others and who love our Lord. And we would love for you to come by and visit with us. But we really need your support here. In the summer, people travel. They stop supporting. They forget about it. And just want you to be one of those people that could perhaps step up and take somebody's place over the summer. We really, really do need it. And we're moving toward that 500 goal here by the end of June of sign-ups for Club New Life. So let me just ask you, if you've never supported us ever, please, please consider supporting New Life. It really can make a huge difference. Mylon, I'm wondering if you could close our program by sharing some scripture with folks.
I sure can. I was reading in Acts 19 this morning how the people were coming to Paul around Ephesus, and they were actually giving up some of their secret practices and burning their books and doing these different things. But the key line is, it says, they having already believed, they chose to bring these things and confess and disclose them and get rid of them. So they were believers, but there was something that was keeping them from growth. And they chose to take these things and bring them into relationship and ask to have them removed from their lives. And they actually had a book burning of all these things. And I'm thinking to myself this morning, so what do I need to bring to the Lord, having already believed, that's keeping me from growing further? I think it's a great principle for all of us.
Thank you, Mylon. Well, if you burn books, please...
don't burn one of ours.
Reading ours first before you burn it. I know it can be tempting after you finish it.
These were bad books.
We love you. We care about you. And we want to help you at newlife.com or 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Please call us and let us find a counselor or a resource for you that just might help. See you next time.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by getting you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you.
But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1018, Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live.